Hey guys, and welcome to Fatherhood. You're listening to the Dads Group Podcast, a national movement with local communities made up of new and expecting dads, connecting, learning, and growing alongside one another. On this podcast, we open up about what is happening inside the minds and hearts of real dads. Today, we hear from the former Australian Ministry of Health, Greg Hunt. Greg was responsible for Australia's pandemic health response, which would have been a full-on role to actually partake in. In this episode, he shares his journey of balancing a very demanding job and being a father. Before we start, I'd like to acknowledge the traditional custodians of the lands we all meet on today. I'd like to pay respects to elders past, present, and emerging in any Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people we have listening to this episode today.
Greg, today we're going to be talking about fatherhood and what it means to you. It's called the expert interview, which is it's a bit of tongue in cheek because no one's an expert in the fatherhood space. No one to date has ever owned being an expert in fatherhood, but being able to touch on the expertise that you have had in the life that you've lived and the work that you've done today. So we're going to touch a little bit on who you are and who you have been as a father, possibly who you would. You know, encourage others to be, but also look at what you've done in that, I guess, your professional life as a father, but also as a professional in the health space. So I'm really excited about this. We've been thinking and talking about this interview for some time now. So maybe we'll just jump straight into it with a question. Greg, what does fatherhood mean to you?
Sure. So look, thanks very much at the time to Andy, to Josh, but to everybody out there. And the first thing is my wife and kids heard that I was doing the expert interview, and they said, but you're not an expert in this. And so look, fatherhood is, along with your partner, the central relationship in your life if you're lucky enough to be in such a situation. That's the first thing. And it's honoured both directly, but sometimes it's honoured in the breach where you're absent. So for me, I had a really good discussion with my wife and kids about this. So we have two children. We have Poppy, who's in year 11, James, who's in year 7, so 17 and 13 respectively, and my wife, Paula. But the first thing is, for much of their lives, they've been almost raised in a single parenting situation because of my work. I've been away as a member of parliament and as a minister for much of that time. I've been on the road and so not here, and also sadly, when I am present, I haven't always been present, which is probably the biggest criticism to level at myself. And so my wife has done the heavy lifting. But what we've tried to do is to really engage the kids through sport, through conversation, through, activity together. And at different stages, running with my daughter, soccer with my son, Aussie rules with my son. At the moment, my daughter's at an age where she's doing her learners for driving, so doing the driving. I've got more time to do that now. In fact, the reason that I finished Parliament after two decades was primarily, I loved what I was doing. I loved my work. It was intense and arduous, but I had to make a decision of, will I ever be a proper dad? And that was actually pretty much the sole motivating reason for finishing, and as well as having, I think, a great potential successor in Zoe McKenzie in my area. It was that binary choice of either I continue to be an absentee dad, doing my best whilst I'm here and being on the phone most days, but pretty much every day and sometimes multiple times a day, but it actually having the time to take son or daughter to the gym, to do the driving lessons, to do those things on a regular basis. And so that decision was made essentially for the one reason, and that's not virtuous, that's a recognition of a lack of virtue or expertise beforehand. But it, the number one rule, which my wife and I talk about, is engagement. And you know, being with them on their things. And then the objective in all of this is, I think, to build confidence, give them that sense of worth and worthiness with humility at the same time. So confidence in the sense that you're sufficiently on top of yourself to believe in yourself, but sufficiently aware to recognize that you don't have to tell everybody. And if we achieve those outcomes, then we will have, I think, done the right thing, that they're equipped for life.
Greg, that's been really incredible insight for you to share that. And I just want to highlight that in the spaces that we operate with a lot of new fathers and experienced fathers, that the themes of what you're talking about is something that's absolutely common to all of us, almost all of us, if not all of us. And I think that it's important to have someone like yourself who is a leader in many, many different realms to just share from the heart about what that's meant to you and what and how it's allowed you to shape your decisions for the future with your family. It, to me, that's a really exciting, I guess, piece of life to share with new and expecting fathers, and also fathers who, I guess are in a similar situation to yourself as well. But I can definitely resonate with that with work. We all have, we all have a provisional job for our families, whether you're a mum or a dad, and sometimes that job, so to speak, is almost always it's fighting for your time, isn't it? And I think that fight, that tension that exists, will always be there. And for many fathers that I speak to, they indicate that gives them a sense of failure. And I think it's important in that space to acknowledge that's a normal part of fatherhood. It's how you choose to be intentional about your plan for the future, which you've obviously thought about quite a great deal, and how to progress from there. But firstly, thank you very much for sharing that. It's a deep insight. I wanted to ask you a question. Fatherhood for you, you've shared a little bit about how you have been a father and how you want to be a father. Tell us, if you don't mind, your experience of having a father or not having a father as you were growing up, and maybe look upwards towards that historical context of fatherhood and what was maybe role modeled or not role modeled to you.
Yes, so Dad was also a member of parliament, and he was a member of parliament for 30 years, Alan Hunt. And he worked intensely. So he was in parliament until I was in my early 20s.
Right.
So, yes, that's right. Yeah, no, he was in parliament until I was in my, mid-20s. And that was the only existence that I knew. And he never encouraged me to follow his profession. He said, you'll have a huge amount of time away. But what I did was develop the interest by osmosis. And I saw his work as quite sort of noble, the genuine sense of public service. Now, you see it in a gilded way as a child, but two things that came through were he never brought the stresses of the job back home. And he would work at home, we'd draft legislation on the dining room table by hand, equally, he didn't grizzle about the job or other things like that. And so when we were together, whether it was playing cricket or traveling, or in particular, I remember, you know, very fondly talking of an evening, probably through about ages 13 to 18, you know, when he was around, probably after nine at night, talking for an hour or an hour and a half, just about confidence and life, and effort and service. And so that was how he melded the two. He was away probably a similar amount, but without the challenge of the telephone, which was bringing at the height of the pandemic up to 1,000 direct messages to my phone a day.
Yeah.
And so, you know, those were a couple of the things that I took away. By his own admission, he didn't feel that he got the third act of his life completely right, in the sense that after he left Parliament, he was well employed, but he didn't feel that he had quite sufficient purpose as part of it. He had a stellar parliamentary career and pre-parliamentary, but so from an early time, that framed my direction that I would build my life in three phases, not two: pre-parliamentary, parliamentary, but then very clear purpose in the third act. And so I'm just at the commencement of that, and I feel in, you know, a great place. But, you know, learning from him, saying this is what I think I've got right and what I haven't, and then leaving, you know, whilst my daughter's still in year 11, allowing enough time to be around, intense time for her, but at least you're here. And then with my boy, you know, the fact that we're taking him to the gym or to soccer five times a week, you know, he was playing soccer three times a week and going to the gym a couple, and playing football out in the backyard here or things like that. They make a, that's been a really good 3 months for us. So when you can have that time, take that time.
And Greg, if I could ask you about, you know, the relationship with your dad, what would you say is one of his, you know, a success story where you interacted with your dad? I mean, you shared before talking at night. That was great. Is there another one, maybe as a younger child, that you can recall spending moment of time with your dad that inspired you, or you can remember and just go, that was a special moment?
Yeah. So look, I remember, you know, riding on his shoulders as a very little kid. That were, you know, that's sort of etched into my memory as one of my favorite times of, you know, he's got your legs, you've got your hands on his head.
Yeah.
And just sort of walking up around like that. And that's growing up feeling, you know, you don't know it at the time, but you just feel very safe and loved. And that's a great dad thing to do. And so I, you know, that's very, very strong in my earliest of memories. Yeah. And that's not, there's no specific thing there. It's just a way of engaging, which is really, you know, close bonding. And it's, well, you know, here 50 odd years after that, that's still etched in my mind.
Yeah, and that's exactly why I asked you that, because it's so significant, and that's why we ask these questions around you as a father, you being a child of a father, because we get to connect with this, you know, you outlined safe and, you know, loved. Like, these are the two most important elements for children to develop. You know, their cognitive development is based on firstly being safe and secondly being loved. And you had that sentiment, you know, with your father, which is, you know, absolutely beautiful. And he probably won't recall the same etching that you have in your memory of that moment. Mm. And you won't recall the same memory that your children have for you, but they will have at times felt safe and loved. And that'll be their experience of their father. And the reason why we talk about fatherhood is to highlight the way in which a father or a father figure can fundamentally change the role, the development, the cognitive development of an infant and a young person all the way through their teenage and adult years, because of those two huge pillars that you outlined as their safety and love. And I think that's it's funny because the universal themes, when we talk to all different types of fathers, they come back to some really key, amazingly simple things. And I think in the work that we are doing around engaging fathers in that perinatal period, telling them these stories and sharing with them as they're about to become fathers for the first time, is so empowering to help them understand that from an early age, that connection, you know, you were saying you were on his shoulders. There's that physical touch, which is public and appropriate and happy and joyful and celebratory. And these are all really positive things that we underestimate the power and the impact on the children that are on our shoulders at the time. And there's so many other activities that are like that, rough and tumble play. But tell me, Greg, one of your, where you would now perceive a fatherhood success story, just a moment, nothing, it doesn't have to be super special, but where you perceived it with your children, where you were connected in that way, regardless of whether they felt that, but you felt as a father, you know, I'm doing it, you know, I'm doing this and it's good.
Yes.
In their younger years, if possible.
A couple of things here. Firstly, one thing I have really tried to do is when my little guy has played soccer, to be there for the matches on the weekend and, you know, to be supportive. And it's a great club, Mount Martha, where parents are never critical, never sort of having a go at the opposition. The whole thing is to be supportive of their kids, our kids, but also, you know, to acknowledge the other team. So it's just a really good culture that's been built up. But to be there and to take him to soccer and then to, you know, I would walk laps even if I was on the telephone. So for, you know, an hour or so, I'd still walk laps around the pitch, but, you know, be observing, you know, making comments. And I really enjoyed that. Translated that this year into being able to get to trainings after I left Parliament and finished as minister at the end of May. And so that's meant for about 3 months I was able to go to training most times a week, so Tuesdays and Thursday nights, and just be really what I'd call the coach's assistant, not the assistant coach, you know, nothing Ted Lasso like in that, but the coach's assistant of putting out the cones or the, you know, collecting the balls that get kicked wildly, but just being there and again doing the laps, collecting them, and spending that time being what I'd call a bit of a normal dad, which I'd never had the opportunity to be. So that's the earlier days, you know, when he was six or seven, yeah, going to the match. And then that's just about confidence. You can do this and, you know, what do you do well and make sure you run back. And now he's absolutely flourishing. And then with my daughter, it's been working with her on reading. You know, we did a lot of reading. She had been a voracious reader for pleasure. Now, year 11, she's obviously completely down the tunnel. But, you know, talking through the Harry Potter books with her, I think at the end of grade one, grade two, she started to really read. And I thought at that point, well, she'll be okay in life if she's a really good reader. And talking with her about that after having done lots of reading as she progressed in her reading, that was our real engagement.
That's wonderful. And I think, you know, those simple but powerful building blocks, you know, I heard you with your son. Sorry, your son's name, Greg, was?
James. So James and so Poppy.
James and Poppy, yeah. The building blocks in that, you know, that impact space is, you know, on that soccer pitch is time, and presence. And, you know, even on those days where you had to be on the phone working, it didn't take away from your presence in that space. Your presence was felt. It was acknowledged both, you know, subconsciously and consciously. And that I think is something that as fathers, we, you know, sometimes we have to be working, but we can be present with our children in the same space. And that presence, physical presence, even though you may not be engaging in the same activity, actually does have an impact. And I recall many times when my dad would be working in the garden, he's, you know, we enjoyed being present in the garden with Dad because he was there. We weren't playing the same activity often. It was mostly, you know, maybe 10 or 20% of the time he would engage with us in an actual activity, but his presence was very meaningful and powerful. And also that other building block of reading for our children. Some people even start reading, you know, when the baby's in utero and starting to, you know, train and help the baby understand their voice. And these are the things that we don't realize can have an absolute huge impact on our relationship with our children later on. Greg, you have done some work. For those of you that don't know you and your work, you've done quite a lot of work in the health space and looking at different ways to positively support a nation in the way in which we're supported through our health challenges, equipping organisations, public institutions and individuals to be healthier, amongst other things. In the fatherhood space, what have you seen change, I guess, in the last 10 years that relates to, I guess, you know, that space around enabling families in the perinatal space to be healthier?
Sure. I think the big change there is acknowledgement of mental health challenges for men and for dads.
Right.
And the sort of more traditional suck it up in silence approach has evolved, I think, very significantly. So people now are much more aware that mental health can strike anybody, that suffering in silence is ultimately not either sustainable nor desirable. Mm. So I think over that last 10 years, that has been a national journey. It didn't begin 10 years ago. I mean, it really began, I think, in the 1990s. Beyond Blue, Jeff Kennett, Pat McGorry, people like Jalea Skian, and Christine Morgan and so many others. But I think it's an exponential curve, and particularly women and mums, there was much more focus and they were better able to adapt early to acknowledging mental health challenges. The men's mental health is what's really taken off, I think, over the last decade. And it was a goal of mine from my time as minister in 2017 to really build that awareness that it can be anyone, anywhere, anytime. And that there is not just maternal mental health challenges, but men as well. And so a lot of our funding went to postnatal and perinatal depression, but we made sure that it was inclusive of men as well as women, rightly, you know, and biologically in terms of the actual statistics, women would get a higher proportion. But it was not unknown and was in fact relatively common for men. And so to investing on both sides of male and female perinatal and postnatal depression and anxiety was a very important thing, such as groups such as Panda and others.
Mm. Yeah, and Panda, you know, Julie and the team from Panda have been incredible in collaborating with the work that we do. 96% of new mums, you know, seek help first from the partner that they're with. And those partners have in many ways, you know, been unintentionally overlooked by the system, yet there's a huge gap there to be able to support fathers to be better partners in that perinatal space, and just be more aware, as you were saying, is that of their own potential mental challenges that, you know, I think now being in this space for over 8 years, I could say those mental challenges that will come, not if they come, in the space of parenthood, yeah. Those challenges are, I'd say, guaranteed to come. Some type of high level of stress or anxiety, possibly depression, but certainly isolation in those early years of parenting is something we all face. So also looking at if you could, so your work in that space as the federal minister for health was very powerful. If you took that hat off and just thought from a human perspective, I mean, you're joining us for the Perinatal Fatherhood Roundtable, which is exciting in a few weeks. But we're wanting to take people's positional hats off and look at and just think about it from a human perspective. What could it look like in 10 years for us to support families in a way that engages fathers? And, you know, we're trying to think courageous new thinking and, yeah, I guess, do you have any thoughts in 10 years, where could we be as a nation that supports mums and dads and babies in that perinatal space? What could that look like based on, I guess, yeah, or you've had so many experiences with so many different CEOs of health organizations and leaders in research. We've been able to establish that there's some core fundamentals here, safety, love, you know, time and presence. In that perinatal period that are advantageous. Could you give us your, you know, big picture thinking in 10 years? What could it look like for a new dad who just found out that they're about to have a baby?
So the first thing is, you know, everybody's life circumstances is different. You know, relationships ebb and flow, and, you know, I've been fortunate with Paula to have a really strong relationship. I'm, you know, reminded of David Bowie, who was asked about his greatest achievement, and he said, marrying my wife. And they said, oh, what about artistic? He said, everything else pales in comparison. But people, yeah, relationships stay. Many people are single and isolated, so there's no universal fit here and there's no right fit. Having said that, what is strong in Australia is the mothers group networks for new mums. They're not universal, of course. Not every mum is part of one, but they're ubiquitous in the sense that they are right around the country. What I think is nowhere near as developed, and where there is the runway to develop it, is dads groups. So exactly what you are. And to be expanding that network for fathers. Now, that often happens informally through sports clubs, through swimming, through whatever. But it's often those people who are most in need who are least likely to access. And so, you know, they're isolated. They may be uncertain about themselves. They may feel insecure and therefore not want to talk about their problems, although even though that's the very definition of need. And so to build that awareness in the same way that mental health awareness has been done of fathers' support groups, and to build the network and the awareness and therefore the willingness to go through the door. So to normalize it. And you know, I said that mental health was on the path, firstly, to destigmatization. I think that was achieved about a decade ago, but normalizing it. And destigmatization is where, you know, somebody can look at me or you or anybody else and say, hey, I'm completely relaxed with the fact that you're struggling. You may have anxiety or depression or bipolar, and not be judgmental. Normalization is where I can look at myself and not feel guilty and say, look, I have, a torn hamstring, and nobody thinks of that as a judgmental issue. I have anxiety or depression, or I'm struggling with bipolar or schizophrenia or feelings of suicidality. And so that's the same journey now for those in need of dad support, to say it's normal to feel inadequate and it's normal to join with others who can provide that support. That's the big journey for fatherhood, in my judgment, not the knowledge, but the networks over the next decade.
Brilliant. And yeah, it's nice to have, you know, that perspective, since I guess leaving your hat a few months ago and still having a very strong opinion on, I guess, what could happen or what needs to happen, and or a bit of a combination of both. Greg, we've got a number of new fathers and mothers that come into a number of different sessions that we run. A Welcome to Fatherhood session, which is like an antenatal introductory service for dads. We are doing programs with, you know, some of the hospitals in Queensland, with the Department of Health in Metro North. And we have a hospital program and a digital program and a community program to follow that journey of that new father to engage with him. So there are touch points that we would have for a new or expecting father to connect with the work that Dad's Group, us, do. My question is, you know, picture of new father is sitting in his antenatal class, or is dialed into an antenatal class. He might be a fly-in, fly-out dad. He might be remotely working on an oil rig. And he's listening to this. He's, you know, found out he's becoming a father, or he's a new dad. What would you say? What would you speak? What words would you speak? An encouragement or a tip? What would you say to that father knowing your journey, knowing thousands of other people's journeys, what thing would you say to him to inspire or encourage that new dad?
I think it's easy. It's a combination of probably the most difficult thing you'll ever do, but the most rewarding. I think it's as simple as that. It's like watching a newborn. You would imagine that, you know, two of the most natural things in all of the world are to feed and to sleep for a newborn, but you actually have to teach them. Yeah. And and same with fatherhood. You have to learn on the job. And we all learn from our own growing up experiences as to what's good and bad. And, you know, many people grow up without dads, so they don't have that role model, but they'll see things around them. They may feel, you know, guilt or anger or inadequacy, but to recognize that it is ultimately, of all of our experiences in life, arguably the most rewarding that you can have. And that's my view, that, you know, I may have had some, you know, modest professional success along the way, but the definition of how I'll view my life when I'm, you know, in my absolutely golden years and facing my mortality is I'll be reflecting on the family and if we're lucky enough, you know, with grandchildren, and depending on the choices that our kids make. So what does that mean? It means, I think, the most rewarding thing, but the hardest in the sense that you have to find the balance of being positive and constructive, but providing framework and discipline and boundaries. And, you know, if you're effectively a fly-in, fly-out dad, as I'd been for most of our children's lives, you know, you tend to be a little bit more of a good time dad. Let's go and go, you know, do rock climbing, indoor rock climbing, or do sport or gym. Or, you know, sometimes it's, hello, you got to provide the boundaries. So you get those things wrong, but it's ultimately, it's the very essence of being.
Beautiful. Wonderfully put. And I think from all those different things that you've put together and shared, stories that you've shared, it's been really valuable to hear that. I haven't asked this question before, and you feel free to answer it however you want or not to answer it. But Greg, one day your children, as you kind of referred to, might have children, you'd have grandchildren. Can you think of something that Greg Hunt now would say to, you know, potential child who will be a father or a mother? And what would you encourage them with?
I think, again, to help build confidence in their children, and so to have confidence in themselves that you can do this. There'll be good days and bad days, and good hours and bad hours, but you can do this, believe in yourself and help them believe in themselves and enjoy each phase. That's the other thing. There's a weird little sort of very strong moment in my mind that I remember being about 13 and walking outside and making a pledge to myself. It probably came from my mother or my father, but to enjoy each phase of life and to be not just waiting to finish school or finish university or finish this or finish that. You're always in a phase, and to try to enjoy the phase, the segment, the moment, and some things you have to work through, but it was a gift that I've had since I was about that age. Of doesn't mean you don't have terribly difficult times if you're working, in the middle of the pandemic, 18 or 20 hours a day, with every single moment being absorbed. But as a general rule, to try to enjoy those phases, and so not to race through them. It doesn't mean you don't work quickly, but to be present in your own life, and therefore you're present in the lives of those around you.
That is such a great statement, such good advice, for your kids, but also for other people who will be having kids. And it's so exciting to hear that, Greg. That's exactly what my dad said to me once, and I didn't get it when he said, go, you got a big exam, I know you're stressed, but just go and enjoy it. And I just remember just going, enjoy it. It's an exam. I'm going to hate it. Yeah. And then he showed me, like you're saying now, it's a phase. It's you've prepared for it. You've done everything you can. There's nothing more you can do. Go and enjoy doing that with the ability that you've got. And that's exactly what you're saying now to, other new and expecting mothers and fathers is to enjoy it and just be present. So wonderful. I really appreciate that. We've got a couple more minutes now where Adam or Josh might be able to ask you a question if they'd like to. It's been an incredible interview. Thank you for that time of reflection that you've shared with us and shared with all the other new and expecting mothers and fathers that might hear this in the months and years to come. It's been absolutely fantastic. If you have anything else you want to share, Greg, then please do so. Otherwise, I'll hand it over to Adam and Josh if they have any questions. Otherwise, they can type them as well. But thank you.
Josh, do you have anything at all?
No, nothing for me. Thanks.
There's so much, not so much a question as such, but just a statement. There's so much that you've spoken about today, Greg, that just highlights that it doesn't matter what career you're in, what your background is, fatherhood is fatherhood, whether you're a stepfather or whatever, father figure. It's, you being fly in, fly out, or me being home and working from home, doing what I do, it doesn't differentiate that there's all kinds of challenges that we all face, and highlights that we all face as well that are very much a similar path and a similar story. And I just think that just highlights again that there are people that could think, okay, well, a man that's held in a very important position here is talking, and I'm not really sure if I can relate, but there's so much that you said today that every father could relate to, that from my opinion anyway. And even as you were talking, made me think about, you know, myself and with my two children and how I am, and thinking about, am I being who I want to be? Do I need to do more? Do I need to do less? Whatever it might be. So thank you so much for the wonderful things you were sharing. It really, as I said, I think what I loved so much was it highlighted that fatherhood is fatherhood. Doesn't matter what country you're in, doesn't matter where.
Oh, yeah.
You know, all kinds of, it's all done, you know, everyone does things differently. It doesn't mean that. But at the end of the day, the simple factors of safety and love came back into the picture again, and it just made me think, yep, make sure you're doing that, Adam, and everything else should take care of itself. So thank you very much.
No, it's a pleasure, and it's a privilege to talk about it, and not as an expert, but as somebody who's made most of the mistakes along the way that are possible. You know, more than anything else, it's in, you know, giving them confidence through knowing that they're safe and knowing that they're loved. And doesn't mean we don't, you know, all have to draw the line and say, you know, you can't bite your sister or you can't do other things. You know, all the crazy human elements occur. The question is what ultimately you're giving them in terms of, I guess, energy and engagement. And the more the better, but they don't need that much. It's sustenance. And if you can give them that sense of real belief, then that can make all the difference.
Brilliant. Thanks, Greg. It's been an absolute inspiration. I knew that it would be inspirational. I just didn't know how, and now I know. It's been wonderful. So looking forward to staying connected with you, looking forward to the Perinatal Fatherhood Roundtable coming up. And you go and have a great day with your family, Greg. I hope it looks like the sun's shining out there. Go and do something fun with them. And thanks for the inspiration today. Cheers.
My pleasure. And thanks to you guys, Tom and Adam and Josh, for everything you're doing with Dad's Groups. As I say, I think the course of family life in Australia over the next decade is for more and more support for dads to be matching what mums have sensibly done, not universally in the sense that not every mum has access to that support or has chosen to take it, but building those networks, and that's the thing.
I hope you guys enjoyed that episode. If you'd like to support Dad's Group, then check out our merchandise at www.dadsgroup.org. While you're there, check out the Get Support tab to see all the incredible resources available to new and expecting parents. I hope you guys have a great week, and I'll catch you next week. Cheers, guys.